behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I am Ben the Danger Bolin.
Danger? I like the new nickname.
I'm going big with it.
You know what? Can I tell you a true story?
Yeah.
We have friends right now. Their son's middle name is Danger. They name their kid. I'm not going to tell you the first name, last name.
Right.
The middle name is officially Danger.
Legally.
Legally, officially Danger.
How old is young Danger?
He would be probably a little over a year at this point. A year and a couple months.
Okay. All right, so he's going to grow into that name.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Yeah, I think that's cool because, true story, some of my friends named their kid Danger as a middle name.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's a thing. Yeah.
This is the first I'd heard of it, so interesting.
I wonder if our audience out there has, do you guys have any middle names that are Danger, or do you have any friends whose middle name literally is Danger?
Yeah, I wonder. I just wonder how common that is, but Danger would be apt for today's episode, right?
Yes. Danger would be apt for today's episode. Ladies and gentlemen, Scott and I are taking a look at a show that we both enjoyed, Breaking Bad.
Enjoyed it immensely, we should say, because
yeah.
I really, really love this series, and I caught on to it late, so I was one that, you know, rented the DVDs and watched them, you know, in, I guess, one after the other on
sure.
weekends and things like that, and caught up quickly. I did have to wait for the final season, you know, to be able to watch it.
Because they split it in half.
Yeah, the way that, you know, the delay works and everything. But you were watching it as it was occurring, as it was happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were telling me along how great this was. So that's the whole reason I started watching. And it was a fantastic recommendation, by the way. I mean, if you haven't seen the episode or the series, rather,
mm-hmm.
I can't recommend it highly enough. I mean, it's really, really interesting from start to finish.
Right. And
ripping.
We say that as guys who don't typically tell people they have to watch or they have to read something. I hate being that guy, but I knew you would enjoy it from the jump, Scott, because you're a big fan of true crime. And this is, for the most part, realistic enough to feel like a true crime story.
It does feel that way. You're right. And it's just fascinating, and it draws you in immediately, right? Mm-hmm. From the very first episode. And one thing that, you know, one aspect of this that we felt we could maybe talk a little bit about on this show are the choice of vehicles in this particular series, because it was surprising to a lot of people, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Normally when we see this type of culture, this drug type of culture, and I'll tell you what, if somebody hasn't seen this, maybe you want to turn the episode off right now, because there's going to be a few spoilers along the way, I'm sure.
Massive spoilers,
lots
Scott.
Lots of spoilers, yeah. But I can't imagine somebody hasn't at this point. But
it's possible.
So I think that a lot of people were surprised by the vehicles that were, you know, shown in the series. Really,
mm-hmm.
I keep saying episode
mm-hmm.
in the series, because they were so common. They're so commonplace. It's not like you know, when we see a drug dealer out of Miami and they're
sure.
in a Ferrari, or they're in something very, very flashy,
mm-hmm.
Kind of a, you know, in your face type vehicle.
Bright yellow Bentley.
It's something like that. Yeah, it's nothing like that in this case. I mean, there's a couple of instances where that's occurring on a small scale.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that. But mm-hmm. for the most part, the cars here are normal, everyday vehicles, and very surprising. I mean, when you see them, it's almost like your eyes open, your jaw drops for a second, and mm-hmm. you realize, why am I so surprised at such an ordinary vehicle? Well, it's because these are such extraordinary characters.
Oh, nice. Nice contrast there. So it's true, ladies and gentlemen, Scott and I are doing a podcast on the cars of Breaking Bad. Now, off air, Scott, you made a great point. You said, well, this might be a show that is 15 minutes. It might be an hour. There are massive spoilers. A quick background before we get into it. Breaking Bad is the story of Walter White, an aging, I would say, mm-hmm. high school chemistry teacher diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah, lung cancer, and it's set in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And Walter decides that, you know, with his impending demise, that he's going to have to do something to set his family up, right? He's going to have to provide for his family, which he hasn't been able to now with his kind of meager teacher's salary.
Mm-hmm.
So he decides that he's going to do this by illegal means. He's going to try to make money fast, try to make a lot of money fast. And one way that he sees to do that is through the manufacture and selling and distribution of methamphetamines.
Yes, and using his expertise in chemistry, he was able to create methamphetamine with a level of purity that had not been encountered before.
Yeah, because this guy's a chemist, so he's obviously very good at what he does. And there's a lot that goes into this whole story. I think maybe we've set it up enough already.
Yeah. Let's jump right into it. Scott, what's he driving when this story opens?
This is crazy. In the first episode, you see him, and this is one that you just kind of chuckle to yourself when you see it, right?
Uh-huh.
He's driving a Pontiac Aztec. What was it? 2004 Pontiac Aztec, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of this fern green color. And it's a decade old at this point. When the series began, I can't remember what year the series began. But it was not quite a decade old at that point. And you still were shocked by it because this was a car that this car tops the list of like the worst cars of all time, right?
Yes, that is so true. We always hear about this whenever we do a lemon car, worst car of all time, podcast, the Aztec pops up. And sometimes people say, well, it's overpriced. Sometimes they say it's everything bad about baby boomers. Sometimes they say it's just offensively boring.
Yeah, it's very unassuming, just kind of blends into the background type of vehicle. And I guess, you know, up to this point, that's kind of what Walter White has been, really.
Yeah, he's been a guy in the background. And in his story, we find out that he did have a brush with possible tremendous fortune for his early chemistry work. But now he's just a teacher who drives an Aztec.
And he's very bitter about that.
He's hugely bitter.
That comes into play often in the story. There's a company called Gray Matter, and his lab assistant was somebody who he was romantically involved with, I believe, right? They were dating, I think.
Yep.
And Gretchen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Gretchen Schwartz.
Mm-hmm.
And now she has married another gentleman who Walter was working with at the time.
Oops.
Elliot.
Yeah.
And they had created this Gray Matter together. And you know what? We can't tell the whole story, right? I mean, we can't just go through this whole thing, but he's bitter because now she is now with Elliot and he kind of abandoned the whole thing. And he's been bitter about it ever since because they turned it into a $1 billion industry. And now he's at the point where he needs a lot of money. And he was thinking back to, you know, this opportunity lost. And it's so frustrating, the things that he goes through. I mean, I think a lot of people can understand this. It's kind of like, do you remember the movie, and I don't know if this is even a good comparison, Ben, but wasn't there a movie called Falling Down?
Yes, and it is a great comparison.
Is it? Okay,
yeah.
I'm trying to piece together like how that compares, but it's like things kind of go from bad to worse for this guy.
Uh-huh.
And he's sitting there, and the littlest thing can just
snap you.
Just sets him off. I mean, it's the straw that broke the camel's back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, he gets out, and you know, there's a well, you know what? I'm not going to describe that movie, but
right.
I feel like there's a little bit of that character in Walter White as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And one thing that's great about this is we know that it's not the car he keeps for the entirety of the time, but before we go on, I think it's time for us to introduce one of the backstage people here, a character named Dennis Milliken.
Dennis Milliken, that's right. Dennis, yeah. He's the guy who chose the cars, right?
Yeah, he's the guy who chose the cars along with the creator, Vince Gilligan. And one of the things that Dennis says in interviews is that he and Vince worked attached to the hip side by side, and Vince Gilligan would describe these characters in very specific ways, and then they would find very specific cars. So every time you see somebody who has a speaking role at all in Breaking Bad and they're driving, their car was specifically and symbolically, I think, picked and connected with them.
Well, very much so, because when you see this car, I mean, this Aztec, and we'll move on from the Aztec in a moment, I promise, but it's intended to kind of make Mr. White, as Dennis mentions here, somewhat pathetic. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see it and think like, oh, what is he doing driving this old pile of junk car? And, you know, I know that people who love Aztecs are going to be offended by that, but this does make Walter White look like kind of a pathetic, just a wimpy teacher that, I mean, he
kind of a milquetoast.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to say it, Ben. That's a better way to say it. He's a pushover.
So here's something, though, to move on, if I'm not rolling over.
Well, one
you got
quick
one?
Thing. I just want to say one quick thing is that throughout the series, like the beginning of this, maybe the first season, maybe even into season two, I can't remember where it ends, but this car, this Aztec, gets beat up over and over, over and over again and in just horrific ways. But that also kind of ties along with how Walter gets beat up along the way. I mean, you see him getting damaged as well.
And you're going to say a word about those windshields later, right?
Maybe we can now. I
mean,
it goes through several windshields. And I don't know, there's got to be some kind of symbolism there. I don't know what it is, but it went through windshield after windshield after windshield. And there were a lot of different reasons for it, but it seemed like all the time, you know, and that would cause other things to happen. Like, he'd be driving around with a broken windshield. The police would you know, of course, zero in on that, target him.
Right.
And he would go off on a tirade because now he's feeling a little full of himself, maybe.
Yeah.
And it just was problem after problem after problem. So the way that this vehicle played into the story, I think, worked perfectly.
I think it's the deterioration of the public figure of Walter White, because it goes from, you know, an upstanding sort of blasé member of the community to someone that the neighbors are talking about, and then the police are talking about it.
Yeah,
and
then, because he does trade up.
Yes. Before we talk about what he trades up to, though, just for an interesting contrast, let's parallel with one of the other main characters of this story, one of the other leads, Jesse Pinkman.
Ah, yes.
Captain Cook, right? Jesse Pinkman is a former high school ne'er-do-well that Walter White taught. And Jesse Pinkman, after his time as a child, I think he went straight into full-on dealing, selling, and making methamphetamine of a much lower quality.
Sure, and he's a much smaller scale. He's a very small-scale drug dealer in Albuquerque.
Yeah, and he's kind of a trashy out-trade dude. But I will point out that he has a Monte Carlo when this begins, but it has the suspension system kit, right?
Yeah.
And it's...
So it's a lowrider.
It's a lowrider, and it's kind of deadbeat. He's got a personalized license plate that says Captain Cook.
Yeah, he is so flashy at this point, right? I mean, it's all about standing out and that lifestyle, I guess, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you very much exactly the vehicle that you would expect a character like this to be driving in Albuquerque, New Mexico at this time. I mean, and doing what he's doing. That's just kind of what you would expect. It plays right into it. They nailed this right on the head. I think they've done that with every single character in this. I can't find flaw with any of the vehicles they've chosen. I mean, as we talk about all these today, I think they're all right on target. And there was another lowrider in the series as well, in the very beginning. And that was a 1980 Buick Regal, and it was bright yellow. And it was another lowrider vehicle, you know, that belonged to another kind of low-level drug dealer. And the guy's name was Emilio Koyama. And Emilio, you know who Emilio is.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
He was Crazy Eight's cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And a very flashy vehicle, but again, another small-time meth dealer and involved with Pinkman. So, you know, he's in that circle of friends, I guess, where that was kind of the cool thing to do.
Yeah, I totally forgot about those characters who sometimes were a bit of comic relief.
Yeah, I mean, and this one was, like, eventually abandoned in the desert, you know, and found by the police.
Yeah.
A lot of circumstances around that, but... Interesting that, you know, they would have these two kind of flashy, over-the-top cars, and the rest of them would be very, very low-key. In fact, there's a couple low-key vehicles coming up, one that was maybe the most surprising to me of all.
Ah, okay. And while we're on the way to that, let's talk about one of the most famous vehicles in the show.
Okay.
Which is when Walter White and Jesse Pinkman team up to make meth, because Walter has a secret recipe, but he doesn't have a distribution network. They try to work smart. They say, let's not be those jabronis who blow up our house or something. And they get an RV, a Fleetwood Bounder specifically, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a pile of junk,
yeah,
as you might
terrible.
Expect. I mean, it's a really awful RV. It's kind of cool, just, you know, retro cool, I guess. I mean, in that way, but it's really beat up and dirty and it's kind of gutted inside, or at least they gut it to make it their lab or lab friendly. And the plan is to take this thing out in the desert and cook in it so they have a mobile meth lab. And the thing about the vehicle is that, you know, they found one and they used it in the pilot. And when this guy, Dennis, came on the scene with Vince Gilligan, he said, well, we're going to need more than one of these things. And that's the difficult part. He said, you know, this is a 1980, what, 86 maybe?
I believe 86, 87.
86 Fleetwood Bounder. And here they are in Los Angeles, and this thing is really beat up and everything. Where are they going to find one that matches that? And he says, no, we're going to actually need three of these.
Minimum.
Minimum, because, you know, during shooting, you're going to have one at one location and one at another location. Mm-hmm. You have to have one for the close-ups, one for the driving scenes.
Exactly.
You know, that type of thing happens. There may be one where this one has to be crashed, and mm-hmm. we're not going to be able to recover it, so, you know, you'll have to deal with that. So we're going to need three of these. How are you going to find multiples of that type of vehicle? That's one of the challenges of this whole thing is that, you know, it's not just one vehicle like this. They're going to need several of these cars. So, like Walter's Aztec, I think there were at least two, maybe more than that, because his was heavily damaged several times.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you have to get identical matching vehicle, or close to it.
The same atrocious shade of green.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, you know, it becomes a very difficult job for the guy that's the car wrangler.
And before we move on, let's take a pause for a word from our sponsors. And we're back. Scott, we forgot to talk about one of the more contentious characters of the show, Skylar White.
Skylar, that's right. Okay, Skylar White. Now, she drives a, I kind of expected this out of Skylar White's
character. I kind of did too, yeah.
Now, one thing is that, you know, I thought maybe she would be driving something like a minivan, right? But the idea was that this is the Southwest, and it's going to be a bit more of a rugged vehicle that Skylar would choose,
uh-huh.
right? So she has a Jeep Wagoneer.
Yeah, and the symbolism here is that she is the stable foundation of the family, a motherly character. And, you know, a Jeep Wagoneer, of course, is station wagon. She slowly becomes a little more unhinged as the show progresses. The reason I said she was sort of a controversial or contentious character is because a lot of the fans hated her.
Yeah, you know what? I'll tell you something. As we watched the show, my wife disliked her. And I actually kind of thought she was all right. I mean, I thought this character was always okay. You know,
it was like believable.
Yeah, I thought she was believable. And for whatever reason, my wife just almost right away did not like her from the beginning, and she didn't like Marie.
Well,
now, I don't know what that says, but I mean, I thought that was interesting that she would dislike the two female characters in this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to point out that, the acting and both characters was fantastic. Whenever you dislike a character in a show that you see, it means that the actor is doing a good job, you know?
Yeah, sure.
I think so. With that being said, I hated the character of Skylar. I thought her superpower was to be inconvenient and have problems.
That was it, huh?
And to put lotion on her hands.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, again, I assume that a lot of that is a lot of her reactions are how any reasonable person would react if they found out that their spouse was selling methamphetamine.
Oh, I agree. And we saw a huge slide in the character from where we began. Remember where she was in the pilot episode,
mm-hmm.
all the way through the final episode or close to the final episode. Just an incredible transformation in that character. And I thought she played it really, really well. And, you know, the thing with the lotion on the hands, that was one thing that whenever she was on screen, as soon as she pulled out that lotion to put it on her hands, my wife's like, oh, here we go again with the lotion. It was always the lotion. And I don't know if that has something to do with, like, the pregnancy or what. I mean, I think that is something. I think there's something there.
Yeah, everything about this show was so meticulously planned mm-hmm. that everything you see on the screen has to have some sort of import. Speaking of that family, let's talk about the brother-in-law of Walter White, Hank Schrader.
Ah, yes, Hank Schrader in his vehicle. Now, he was a
DEA officer.
DEA officer, that's right. And so he's kind of the guy in charge down there, right?
Sort of an alpha male at the show's start.
He definitely is, I would say. And he drives a Jeep Commander,
mm-hmm.
kind of a new one. It's a 2006, not brand new.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty nice.
A little bit on the higher end, too.
A little bit, that's right. I mean, as someone said, there's a Top Gear article, I think, that I read that said, you know, just like Hank, it's kind of rugged on the outside, but a little bit, you know, soft and, I guess, sensitive on the inside. That was how they described it. Mm-hmm. And I can kind of see that. I mean, he's got this outward image that he's a really, really tough guy, but he's also got, he's the DEA agent with the heart of gold, Ben.
He sure is, especially, you know, when he sees concern about these other people's kids or his niece and nephew. Right?
I could almost not say that without laughing.
DEA agent with the heart of gold.
With the heart of gold, yeah. It seems like the typical explanation of, you know, the hardened cop type character, right?
His wife, Skylar's sister, the other person you mentioned, Marie, she is also one of the most hated characters on the show. Because whereas Skylar's superpower is being inconvenient and having problems, for the beginning of the show, Marie's superpower is that times 10. Also, she steals.
Yeah, she's a kleptomaniac. That's interesting.
That's sad.
But
man.
She drives around in a new Volkswagen Beetle.
Right.
And again, Ben, like, you know, I think it was another article that I was reading that said something about it, you know, being all cutesy and feminine on the outside, which I think Beetle owners will be upset with, maybe. Some of them. The male ones would.
You know, Josh Clark drives one.
Why did you have to say that? I knew that, but it is perceived oftentimes as being kind of a feminine vehicle. I know they're trying to get away from that image with the newer Beetle, the one that's beyond the one that Marie owns.
That's true.
This one was the kind with the vase and, you know, by the flower vase by the steering wheel, that type of image. And, but on the inside, she's kind of a wreck. I mean, she's kind of a mental wreck.
Mm-hmm.
She steals things. She's really nosy.
She has some issues about kids.
Yeah, she definitely does. So interesting character. And I think, you know, for the vehicle, I mean, when you see her driving it, it's like, well, yeah, that's what Marie drives. Of course it is. I mean, I think that's what I got to tell you, that every character in this show, it's like, well, mm-hmm. of course they drive that car. That's exactly the way it should be.
You know, another great example, if we can move to him, is, Gustavo Fring, one of people's favorite characters.
Yeah, let me tell you. He was a favorite, one of my favorite characters. I mean, as far as bad guy goes, right? A villain.
Mm-hmm. The chicken tycoon.
But when I saw his car, this is another one. This is one where it was like, it was completely shocking. This guy has an enormous drug, empire. Right.
Right, an international drug empire.
International drug empire. And here he is. He's driving around in a 1998 Volvo V70 station wagon.
A legendarily safe and reliable car.
Yeah, but, you know, this is also perfect cover for him. I mean, this guy has got hundreds of millions of dollars probably squirreled away in places.
Right, and he works at the, and he is living under an assumed identity.
Sure.
We never really learn who he is.
He's got the Los Pollos Hermanos, chicken restaurant front
franchise.
Which is just a front for the business.
He is a hugely popular public figure, especially with law enforcement. They love his annual appearances at the policeman's ball.
Oh yeah, he keeps his enemies close, right?
Right, yeah. And he drives the most I guess the best way to say it is the most inconspicuous car. Second most inconspicuous car in the show.
A very pedestrian vehicle for him. I mean, it blends in, and that was completely intentional. That's exactly why he does it. He's the guy that could be driving around in an ultra exotic vehicle, obviously, mm-hmm. anything that he wants, but he doesn't do it. He doesn't drive around in a Bentley, even though he's the owner of a chain of restaurants, right?
Mm-hmm.
He could be doing that. I mean, it's known that he's successful. He's a successful businessman. He could be driving something a little flashier, but he keeps it, relatively, on the inconspicuous level, I guess. He doesn't want to be a standout guy.
And that's something else that we see, is that the serious criminals in this show, the serious criminals, all practice the art of automotive invisibility. Gustavo Fring's right-hand man, Mike Ehrmantraut, drives a Chrysler Fifth Avenue.
Yeah.
And this is old school. You guys know that I like the longer Chryslers and the Monte Carlos and stuff like that. This is totally, I used to think of these as a kid. I used to think of these as grandpa cars, mm-hmm. you know, and
it is, I think.
Well, he is a grandfather in the
yeah,
show too.
Sure.
This is another example of how, if you want to maintain your existence as a criminal, you become inconspicuous. You blend in, right?
Yeah. Now this is a guy, he's a former police officer, and now he's like the head of corporate security at Los Pollos Hermanos,
mm-hmm.
right? But he's kind of Gus's hitman, enforcer, you know, for him. And then he also works for Saul Goodman. He's also kind of like Saul's cleaner, fixer, his
security.
Private investigator,
yeah.
security, a little bit of everything, right? A kind of a jack of all trades. And the thing about Mike is that he's a likable character. At least I liked him. And I guess you did too, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is that Mike has a code of honor. Yeah, he has principles of a sort, you know, and they're certainly not the principles of a law-abiding citizen. He does kill numerous people, but he also doesn't kill them unless he feels like he has to. He is not one of the unstable, unhinged drug addicts that proliferate in the show.
It's,
you know?
It's funny to talk like this, isn't it? We're saying like he doesn't kill them unless they need to be killed.
It's kind of what they're saying. Well, from his position. Yeah.
I understand. It's part of the story, right? I mean, we understand that that's all.
I'm not saying he's a good guy. I'm saying he's likable.
I agree. I totally agree with you. And the thing is, Mike, throughout this whole thing, does not like Walt at all. I mean, there's a lot of friction there.
You, my friend, are a ticking time bomb.
Yes.
Yeah, right? He says stuff like that to him.
And, you know, I should say that, you know, with Jesse, he doesn't like him either, but then he does grow to like Jesse because he gets to know him better than he does Walt. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of interesting things that happen in this car, but it's like the soft, comfortable cruiser that he can kind of hang out in and surveil places. And, you know, mm-hmm. it's like just a car that blends in. Again, he can park it on the curbside. No one really pays attention to it because it's not flashy in any way. It's always dust covered. It looks like it's sun faded. Mm-hmm. It's just a blend in vehicle that fits him perfectly. He can go into some place, do what he has to do and leave. And no one really even knows that he was there.
And it's interesting that you would point out the relationship he has with Jesse Pinkman, because a lot of the Pinkman character arc is this idea of what is authority and what am I doing with my life, purpose, right? And we see that often what his character appears to want is just some sort of good relationship or community or the approval of some authority figure, right?
I think the approval thing is big with him.
Yeah.
I really do think he's always searching for approval from Walter, but in a kind of an abrasive relationship with
him. It's adversarial
well. I mean,
at times.
Yeah. And I know I've said abrasive a few times here, but there's so much of that going on here that, they get along well enough to work together.
Sure.
But that's about it. Something more grows and then the trust is broken and then it goes back to the way it was again before. And it happens over and over again. It's cyclical.
And also because the Pinkman character is very, very loyal. Mm-hmm. Again, it's a heart of gold situation, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like Hank Schrader, he also has a heart of gold, except he is a meth agent rather than a DEA agent. But he forms this, sort of mentorship of sorts with Mike Ehrmantraut. And he begins driving a 1982 Toyota Tercel.
Yeah, now that's a dramatic shift from where he was before with that lowrider Monte Carlo.
I know,
that was so
I know.
Flashy and always so shiny
flash.
And yeah, it was so much. It was like just over the top. But then you know when he bought this Tercel, I mean it's a 1982 Toyota Tercel, four wheel drive station wagon,
mm-hmm.
and it's sun faded and it's just really it's kind of a pile of junk. I mean it's kind of cool, I guess you know. Kind of an older, boxy, retro-looking Toyota, but the idea was when they got this thing, you know, this Dennis guy again, the car wrangler for the series, they said that they wanted something that would be a perfect blend-in vehicle that would, you know, kind of as they said, under the radar,
right,
is what they're looking for, and that's exactly what they found with this vehicle. And to see him in that, after seeing him in that Monte Carlo, it's pretty comical, really. I mean, when he mm-hmm. first buys it, later it just becomes, you know, part of the scene or the scenery rather, and you understand that, well, that's the way everybody in the series is operating. So he's finally kind of understand. He's kind of getting it, I guess, in that, you know, this is the way I should probably operate as well, because it's less dangerous for everybody that's involved.
Mm-hmm.
I'm part of this whole big machine now at this point.
And, you know, it's strange because this makes such a great contrast to Walter White or Heisenberg's differing choice of car.
Yeah, because once he makes that dramatic shift until he decides, you know, when he decides that he's going to become this Heisenberg character. And you know what? Should we just say, I mean, I kind of was digging around to find out where he got this name Heisenberg, right? You know
yeah.
where he found the name Heisenberg?
The Heisenberg uncertainty principle?
Yes, Ben, you're exactly right. It was Werner Heisenberg, and he was a German theoretical physicist, and he was also a pioneer in quantum physics. So it makes sense that Walter would choose this name as kind of his alias, right?
Mm-hmm.
His gang name, I guess, right?
Right.
And also, like Walter White, in real life, Werner was a teacher who was diagnosed with cancer. So kind of makes even more sense in that way. So someone really did the research and found out why he would choose that name. It's such an unusual name, right? I mean, when he said that, everybody's, you know, kind of raised eyebrows like, talking about Heisenberg.
Well, yeah, that's it. And we're not a physics podcast, so I don't want to tangle with that. But it makes sense there, the uncertainty, and then also this personal note, which I did not know. We see this dramatic transformation in Walter White when he finally gives up that cursed albatross of the automotive world, the Pontiac Aztec.
Yeah. Okay. He gave that up.
He's done with it.
And he bought kind of a gangster car, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
So
and it looks
get?
Really good. He got the Chrysler SRT.
Yeah, the 300 SRT. So dramatic change from what he had before. And this is definitely, I mean, this definitely shows this transition in his character. I mean, clearly, I mean, it's a bold choice, especially for him. It's very flashy, something that he probably shouldn't be driving around in town in, but he feels very bold at this point. Very, you know, he's got his chest puffed up at this point.
Uh-huh.
No one can touch him, right? So this is kind of his version of a gangster's car, I guess. And even there in that community, I guess, this car would probably stand out.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's this great scene where he pulls up and he's got this new badass car. Shout out to our super producer, Noel Brown. Noel, is it all right that I'm saying badass on the... Okay, I got the nod. All right. He's a great guy, Noel Brown. I think we've talked about him on the
air
before.
Always a great guy. I think we've mentioned him once or twice.
I try to mention him every episode. Anyhow, point being that when Walter White pulls up in the driveway, his son sees this amazing vehicle.
Yeah, that's right.
And then they just cut to him driving back and his son also driving a new car.
Yeah, okay. Okay, we've skipped one step, though.
What step did we skip?
We've skipped an important step, and this is one that we talked about in the pony car episode. And I think this is critical that we go back. And it's fine that we're here at this point
sure.
But we've got to talk about this other one. This was a now remember this 300 is a 2012 model.
Yes.
Okay, so this is 2012 that we're talking about, or we're close to it anyways. I mean, mm-hmm. as far as, you know, the show or the series.
Right. It's new at the time.
It's new at the time. There was another Challenger that showed up at the time before this one, several years before this one. There was the red Challenger that he bought for his son as his first car, or what he thought was going to be his son's first car. Now, this is Walt Jr., and he shows up with a Dodge Challenger. Not an SRT model, but a Dodge Challenger that was red.
Oh, that's right.
And Skyler threw a fit.
No, yes.
You've got to take that back. There's no way we can afford that. You got to take it back. So he says, all right, fine, I'll take it back. Of course, you know, the kid is very upset about this, right? This is all before his 16th birthday. Mm-hmm. So he says, well, of course I want to drive this thing. And he says, no, we've got to take it back. Your mom says take it back. So I'm going to do that. He takes all the paperwork with him. And he ends up going to some parking lot and just destroying the thing.
I mean, oh, that's right. We totally skipped it.
Donuts. He's burning. Yeah. You know, burnouts. There's smoky burnouts. Uh-huh. He was doing all kinds of sliding around in this empty parking lot.
And then
he goes into a ditch. Or he hangs it up somehow, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was a ditch. I'm pretty sure. And the car is stuck. And rather than call for a tow truck, what he does is he takes the paperwork for the car. He folds it up, sticks it in the gas tank, and lights it on fire, and then slowly walks away and then just watches as the car explodes.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible scene, right? I mean, that's, again, so bold. He's being just like over the top. But this is even prior to when he bought that 300C for himself, or 300 SRT8 for himself.
Yeah, that's right.
But then later, this is one more car between this point and mm-hmm. that point. They buy, for Walt Jr.'s 16th birthday, they buy him a new car because he's been hinting that he needs a new car, right? They buy him a PT Cruiser, and he's a little bit upset about it. I mean, that's kind of an understatement, I guess. I mean, you would think that he'd be happy with it, but he knew that he could have had that Dodge Challenger. And now here is this PT Cruiser in the parking lot, or in the driveway, with a red bow on it. And it's a nice car. I mean, it's a brand-new vehicle.
Sure.
Or not brand-new. Maybe it's brand-new. I don't remember the year. But he's a little bit upset because it's, you know, something like that. Yeah, it probably is. And it's just a little bit too low key for him, because he wants something a lot flashier, right? Because he's a 16-year-old, wants to show up at school with something really cool, right?
Yeah, but he has no idea where his parents are getting this money from. He doesn't know his dad is becoming a drug kingpin.
No, the question was, and I don't remember how this plays in the series, were they already owners of that
car wash?
I'm not sure. The car wash that Walter worked at formerly.
I can't remember the timeline, but there was they do eventually in the show buy a car wash so that they can launder money.
Yeah. And I know we're skipping all over the place, but you know, this is the way these vehicles are working out. I mean, it's a funny timeline, but
it's more about the vehicles.
Now right back to where you talked about. Now they both pull in together, and Walter Sr. has the 300 SRT8, right?
Uh huh.
And then Walter Jr. pulls in, and he's got a Dodge Challenger SRT8 again.
Yeah.
from 2012. So here's his second challenger, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty incredible, but it's an extremely bold move. Again, I mean, it's just so in your face. I mean, he's
bold,
not hiding anything.
It's bold if you have to do it. If you don't have to do it, I would file it under foolish.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't talked about one character that we did mention, which is a character who is sort of a breakout star that a lot of people didn't expect. And that, my friend, is Saul Goodman.
Saul Goodman. That's
Better
right.
Call Saul.
That's right. He's going to have his own series soon.
Yeah. And now Saul in this episode, in this series, is a flashy, trashy, sleazy, ambulance-chasing, crooked-as-they-come lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Think about sleaze. Think about all the things Hollywood tells you about sleaze. Bad hair combed over, right? That's Saul. Bad suits, ill-tailored, that's Saul. Weirdly into doing petty crimes for relatively small cuts of money, that's Saul.
That is so strange, isn't it, that he would – and he's driving a 1997 Cadillac DeVille.
Which is going to be important later. I have an interesting thing about that.
Okay, good. And
yeah.
It's what, a white vehicle, has uh-huh. the license plate lawyer up.
Uh-huh.
And a little flashy, but not out of the ordinary, I guess, from what you would expect from kind of like the big attorney in town, right?
Right. He's like the litigation version of Captain Cook at the beginning of this. You know, little bit deadbeat, little bit two-bit, but he's making an okay living.
Well, he's definitely on the dark side.
He is,
I mean,
definitely.
I'm sure he also, you know, has plenty of legitimate cases, but there's many, many more that he's dealing with that are, you know, under the table type stuff.
Yeah. Every encounter in his office, he's laundering money for Walt, right? Yeah. Eventually. And every encounter in his office, you see there's some other person that has a scam that he's helping out with, you know, like neck injury on the job kind of thing.
A drawer full of cell phones. I mean, like, 50 cell phones.
Yeah, he has so many burners.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
It's pretty funny.
So one thing I'd like to do before we close out, I feel like we're getting a little bit closer.
Maybe. I've got one that I'd like to wrap up.
You've got one? Okay. So I'll just do the cars of the final episode.
Oh, okay.
Is that cool?
That's
going to
lead
we'll...
right into exactly what I want to talk
right.
about, which
okay.
is which is the final car that Walt owns.
Ah, yes. Okay. So you know where we're going with this.
I hope so.
Yeah, you're spot on. All right. So the cars of Breaking Bad's final episode are going to be surprising to some people. In, you know, he's in New Hampshire this time. There's a Volvo 240 DL that he's driving.
Mm-hmm.
And
Stolen.
And this was a car that is apparently, according to the guys Ryan Jalopnik, this just screams New Hampshire like no other car
mm-hmm.
would. But it's also a car that would reasonably be stolen in that area.
Sure.
So it's smart and it's realistic. And then, well, do we want to talk about the Chevy El Camino?
Sure.
There's also a Chevy El Camino in the, in one of the last sections of the show, of the entire series.
That's on the compound, right? On Jack's, mm-hmm. the gang compound, I guess, for the white supremacist group.
Right. And when Jesse finally escapes that compound, he escapes in the El Camino, and it's one of the strangest, most emotional scenes ever. It was some fantastic acting, but that all leads us to say, what, Scott Benjamin?
My favorite vehicle of the whole thing, maybe. I mean, I think this is it. I mean, because there were other cars that we haven't covered, and can I just quickly
go through? Laundry list.
There's just a few that I think we should mention. Now, I'm going to just kind of skip around this list here, but there was one car that was a standout, kind of as almost an exotic. Gretchen Schwartz drives a Bentley Continental GT, and that's a surprise to see in this whole thing. But then again, she's ultra, ultra wealthy, and she's living kind of like this millionaire lifestyle.
Yeah.
Of course she's going to be driving this, and her money's that's not
true.
Dirty money. Her money is through the Gray Matter Technologies Group.
Yeah.
She's, you know, part of this multi-billion dollar industry. Of course she's going to have a fancy car like this, and her husband, Elliot, I would assume, drives something equally flashy, but I don't think we ever see Elliot's vehicle. There's also things like, you know, cars that will just make a brief appearance, like, you know, Ed, the guy that was in charge of getting Walter to New Hampshire. You know, the vacuum salesman
that wasn't really a vacuum salesman. Right.
He's got a 1991 Toyota Previa minivan.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, completely expected as well, because you could drive somebody to New Hampshire in that, and no one would ever even look. Now, I think he actually took a fuel truck, I believe, that he completed the delivery to the cabin, because that wouldn't raise any eyebrows. I mean, you're driving a minivan out into the middle of, you know, the woods, that's going to probably, you know, garner some attention. But, you drive this fuel van where I think he was hidden.
And you had to have different plates too, I'm sure.
Yeah. Plus it worked that he could carry him in that pretty easy, right? You know, undetected. Also later in the series, Skylar ends up, kind of trading up in season 5. She trades up to a 2012 Ford Edge vehicle. So she gets rid of that, that Wagoneer.
Wagoneer,
yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, she's a successful, you know, auto wash executive, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
Dollar executive, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here's one that's interesting. We didn't talk about, and
which one is it?
This makes a pretty brief appearance. It's a BMW. It's a 1996 BMW 318. And this one has a very small part. This is a guy named Ken, and I can't remember Ken's last name, but, Ken is kind of a businessman in town there, and he's one that somehow had ticked Walter off. I believe it was when he was working at the car wash as kind of a towel boy.
Oh.
And he makes him angry, right?
Yeah.
He makes him really angry for some reason. I don't remember what it was. He was being kind of a jerk, Joe, mm-hmm. right? And, Walter later sees him at the gas station filling up, and Walter sneaks over, opens the hood, puts a squeegee between the terminals of the battery, you know, under the hood of his vehicle.
Yeah.
As he walks away, the car bursts into flames as the guy's filling up, and he doesn't know what's going on. It's kind of a, like an I'll get you type scene and, you know, a revenge scene. Very cold, very calculated, and it worked out perfect for Walter. There's also things like, you know, the Mexican cartel car that I think the cousins drove in, and it was very flashy, very out of place, and I think they traded up to, or traded down maybe, to that old kind of ranch truck that they were, as they were walking out of that,
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Remember the village that they were crawling on their bellies in?
Uh-huh.
They traded clothes and they traded, vehicles, right?
Yeah.
They paid them a boatload of cash for this thing. There's also Walter White's rental car. Remember when he was having his Aztec fixed, that you saw him in.
What was it? I don't remember that one.
It was a Toyota Yaris. It was a 2009
oh,
Toyota
that's
Yaris.
Right.
It looked like the tiny little egg car. 2009 Yaris, but, that was his rental vehicle. And of course, you know, when you saw him in that, you're like, well, of course that's what he chose. But he didn't choose it. It was just the rental vehicle. And then just a lot of like DEA agent vehicles. And, maybe there was also that, remember the bike that Drew Sharp was riding on?
Mm-hmm.
The off-road bike. I think it was a Yamaha, TTR 125 that he was on.
Mm-hmm.
That was the kid that witnessed the train robbery.
Oh, that's right.
And very cold and calculated. Todd walks over and shoots him. And, that's just an incredible scene. Bad ending for Drew Sharp. But, and then later you hear all these reports of the missing boy, Drew Sharp, and it's just really, it's kind of chilling.
We have to talk about the very last car though, because I have a question for you.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm going on.
No, no, this
way
is
too
great.
Many vehicles, but...
Cause we could, I have a list and I feel like we could keep going.
We let that go. I'm sorry. That was a long time ago. You led up to it like, and the last car is, and then I went through that whole list. Okay.
No,
so
that was great.
My favorite vehicle the whole season was, or the whole series, I think, was the 1977 Cadillac Sedan DeVille that was Walter's last vehicle.
Which is so interesting that he would be driving a DeVille. The epitome already established in the mythology of the show, the epitome of sleazy, two-bit, just criminal kind of stuff.
Really?
Well, because, you know, it's associated with Saul. It's a different version.
It's an older version. I guess it would be kind of a gangster car in a way. I mean, it's a long vehicle. This particular one I don't see as being like a gangster vehicle. This one is more a method of delivery for him, right?
Right. Yeah. This is a medium because one of the last things he does is this guy is kind of a believable MacGyver for anybody familiar with the MacGyver show, right? He has all these tricks up his sleeves. And one of his last big tricks is that he rigs a sentry gun, a remote controlled sentry gun in the trunk and also rigs the mechanism to pop the trunk and make this thing work.
Incredible scene, but it
so
has
impressive.
To be a big vehicle like this. It has to
be
in.
It has to have the space.
It has to have the trunk space, and that's why this arms dealer that he visits to get this M60 machine gun, he visits this guy named Lawson, and Lawson sets him up with the M60 and the Cadillac, and I would guess, I don't know if it's Walter's device, I think it is Walter's doing, the way he set up the mechanism to fire this thing. I'm pretty sure it is, because I remember him in the desert, kind of working things out, you know, like testing this thing. But just an incredible scene, and the car worked perfectly. I mean, it was just a, I don't know, if you get a chance to watch the final scene, because you can search Breaking Bad final scene and watch, you know, there's maybe the last 15 minutes of it. I've watched it twice this week, Ben, the last 15
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, when we get out of here, when I'm done,
uh-huh.
I'm going to watch it again. It's so cool. And it, I mean, there's a song that'll get stuck in your head forever.
Right.
Forever associated with this. But,
right.
What a cool scene. It's a perfect vehicle. Again, right to the very end, they've got it picked exactly right for the characters, the types of cars that would be in that region. And the temperament of the characters, I guess,
mm-hmm.
it's just a perfect scenario for all of them. And I think they've done an excellent job.
So before you end, just real quick, I wanted to ask you this the entire time. If you were a large scale drug dealer, Scott, what car would you drive?
Oh man. Well, now watching this, I would know that the key is to blending in, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So I guess you would drive something very, very, very simple. I'd probably go with a big Cadillac.
You know, I would go with either a Cadillac or a Honda Civic because it's one of the most common cars.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, keep yourself inconspicuous, right? I mean, the age and condition of the car
mm-hmm.
should match the region and the type of people or the type of circles that you're normally in outside of that drug world, right?
Yeah. What about you, Noel? What car would you drive as a drug kingpin? Oh, he said a Tesla.
A Tesla. He said a Tesla. Really?
Wow.
That's a bold move, Noel. I mean, he'd stand out for sure, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
stand out for sure.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, that makes me rethink it, though, because I can already see the downfall of my drug empire. I would also want a Tesla.
But let me tell you, though, in this area, that might not be a bad choice because there's plenty That's of them true. Around now.
That's true. A Honda Odyssey would stick out more than a Tesla in our neck of the woods.
How did I know you were going to work Odyssey into this podcast somehow? I thought you were going to say that Skylar should be driving an Odyssey. That was what I thought you were going to say.
Oh, I should have, yeah.
And through the whole thing, I've been waiting for it, but it never came until just now.
Well, now that my prejudices are finally becoming apparent, I guess it's time for us to go.
You know what? I just wish. I know we covered so many things. We jumped all over the place, and we were kind of just telling, like, you know, one-tenth of stories as we went along, but it's so fun to kind of think back to that whole series of shows, you know, the five seasons.
Yeah.
Was it like 62 episodes, I think?
Mm-hmm.
It's so fun to look back at that. And there's so many moments that I'll think about after this that I should have brought up. I wish we could almost tell the story from beginning to end, like, or in order, because that would be an interesting way to do it.
That would be.
It would be difficult,
mm-hmm.
Because things, you know, they go away and they reappear.
And sometimes things aren't quite linear.
Yeah, exactly right. You don't know what's going on until you get to the end, really. So,
yeah.
It would be difficult to do, but I hope we've been at least a little bit entertaining for people that have seen the series and can say, like, oh, yeah, I remember that. And maybe maybe they can write in to us with some of their favorites or some of the things that caught their attention, because I know that we're not looking at every single angle here.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be other ways to look at, you know, why these certain people were chosen for that character. And I'd love to hear some of our audience perspective on that.
That's a great idea, Scott. We'd also like to hear your suggestions for other shows that have a lot of vehicles in them that we could take a look at, because we both really enjoy these episodes. We can only hope that you enjoy them as much as we like making them. But we're on the way out. Talk to us on Facebook and Twitter if you want to write to us with more suggestions for shows we should cover. You can easily do that right now from your phone, even, because we live in the future.
What?
Our email address is
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.